All right, I think we're ready to begin. We are on our second week of our, I think it's 6 week Odyssey of Psalms. So this is a great opportunity to preach on the book of Psalms. The psalm for today is Psalm 28, actually. And of course, for the intro, they just have verses 1 and 2, and then the last three verses, 6 through 9. But we'll go through the whole psalm. Because they take out kind of the heart of this psalm. Most commentators classify this psalm as a lament, and I think you'll be able to kind of see the reason why they do that. It follows a rather typical form for laments in that the psalmist addresses his petition to Yahweh and asks to be heard, and then the middle of the psalm he gives his prayer, and then at the end there is a section of thanksgiving and confession, profession of faith, really, and intercession on behalf of the people. Actually, this is another fascinating psalm. So there are the psalms that are we're going through in the next several weeks are all very significant psalms, I think, and we can learn a lot about the theology of the book of Psalms and of the Old Testament in general by going through some of these. So let's begin with verse 1. As you can see, the first word, Le David, that Lamed, scholars aren't sure what that means. It can mean to David, in relation to David, for David. Most interpret it as a Lamed of authorship, of David. And it makes good sense here. As you go through this psalm, you will see how if it is assumed that David is the author, there are some significant points, I think, that can be made. So, Le David, of David. Eleka Yahweh ekra, zuri al techerash mimeni. To you, O Yahweh, I call out, or cry. Zuri, my rock, al techerash. Notice the standard way of a negative imperative, use the imperfect with al. Charash means to be silent. It's a stative verb normally, but again, stative verbs also can have active meanings, like male, to be full, can also mean to fill. And so here, I think we should just, because of the following preposition, give it an active sense. Something like, do not turn silently from me. And so the picture that springs to my mind when I see this, notice he calls Yahweh his Zuri, his rock, and then says, do not turn silently from me, or in silence away from me. And, you know, if you've ever been in this experience where someone that you respect very much and have a great affection for is angry and upset at you, and you try to talk to them, and instead of talking back to you, they turn away in silence. I think that that's the picture that the psalmist is trying to give here. So that it's his rock is all of a sudden as if he has left him. All right, so do not turn in silence from me. The second line then, pen tekeshe mimeni ve nim shalti im your day bor. Lest, and then I think the next verb again should be interpreted as a conditional. Lest if you turn in silence from me, I become similar to those who go down into the pit. Bore is usually a word used for a cistern or a well, but it's also in the Psalms a word parallel to Sheol. And that phrase, your day bore, is used to describe people who've died, death. So those who go down to the pit. All right, so there's his address, his petition to Yahweh, and he continues verse 2. Shema kol tachanunai be shav'i eleka. Shema, of course, call imperative. Hear the voice or the sound of my tachanunai, my supplication. The root is from chanan, to be gracious or favorable towards. So here's a supplication, really, asking for Yahweh's favor. So hear the voice of my supplication. Bet shavi, from the root shava. Notice that it is a pl infinitive construct with a bet in front of it, so that you would translate it, when I cry out to you. All right. Then he continues, bet nasi yadai, when I lift up my hands. That's again an infinitive construct call from nasa. Okay. When I lift up my hands, el devir kodsheka. To the debir, that is a term that came to be used for the Holy of Holies, the innermost sanctuary of the temple. So literally, it's to the inner chamber of your holiness. And again, remember, Hebrew very much expresses in this construction what we would translate as an adjective. So you would translate it, when I lift up my hands, to your holy chamber, or reference to the inner sanctum, inner room, some way. And I think that line is rather significant theologically, I think, and it's helpful, I think, and should be read in the light of 1 Kings 8. And if you will remember, that is after Solomon had built the temple. It was his prayer at the dedication of the temple. And if you read that, you should read that, because what Solomon says there, first thing he says after he has built this temple is he admits that there is no way that Yahweh can fit in this temple, that the whole earth is really his home. But then he asks Yahweh to look to the temple, because you promised to put your name there. And his prayer goes on to say that when people pray, and he mentions it several times in this chapter, when people pray towards the temple, he asks Yahweh to look at the temple and then forgive. And so you get the picture here that the people, what the temple was obviously is where God was present with his people in a special way. When the people wanted to find their God of grace and mercy, their God who was a friend to them, they looked to the temple. And there they remembered that the covenant and the promises and the God of grace and mercy. And in the same token, you get the picture in 1 Kings 8 of God looking at the temple and seeing and being reminded once again of the fact that he had promised to put his name there and of the promises and the covenant that he had made to his people. And I think that you can really develop the idea of the gospel, that when we want to find God who is our friend, you see, if it is this, if we are in a situation in which it seems as if God has turned in silence away from us out of wrath or displeasure from our perspective, and we want to find God who is a friend, we have to look to Christ. And there we see God who is a God of grace and mercy and who promises to forgive and love us. And at the same token, you see, God looks at the sacrifice of Christ and says, for my son's sake, I will forgive and bless the people. Okay? So, you know, I think that that's a theme that can be developed. Yes? Could be, yeah. I'd have to think about that connection a little more as well. But, yeah, kind of a similar kind of thing. But I think that this psalm shows the significance once again of what the temple meant to the people, you know, okay? And especially the inner room. You remember where the Ark of the Covenant was, and that's where Yahweh dwelled between the cherubim. All right, so then we go on, verse 3. Al tim shekeni im resha'im ve'im po'alei aven. Do not drag me away. That the root of that is mashak. Again, it's simply a call, imperfect, with a first common singular suffix. Do not drag me away with the resha'im, with the wicked, and with those, the workers of iniquity. Again, I think the picture is, the metaphor is of someone being dragged away to prison, you know, being dragged away with criminals. And again, as soon as I see this line, I think of Isaiah 53, and I think of trial and passion of Christ, of course. That again, David, as the king of Israel, foreshadowed the king, Christ. And so the events that happened in David's life were foreshadowings or types of what would happen to Christ. So that when David was beset by enemies, you see, In a sense, that was foreshadowing the enemies that would finally surround Christ. And of course, the trial, you get the picture here that the David, if he's the author of the psalm, is feeling injustice. Okay, you know, that's the metaphor that comes to mind when you see verse 3 here, in the same way, of course, the trial and crucifixion of Christ. So, do not drag me away with evildoers, with the workers of iniquity. Dov re shalom im re'ehem, with those who speak peace with their friends. Okay? Vera'ah bilvavam, but wickedness or evil is in their hearts. In other words, hypocrites. Okay? Those who act as if everything is well on the outside, but in their hearts, there's nothing but evil. Okay, verse 4, we continue with this prayer. Ten lahem kefa'alam u keroa ma'al lehem. Ten is, of course, from Natan, imperative. Give to them according to their work, pa'alam. U keroa, and according to the wickedness of their deeds, ma'alal. Okay, from alal, to deal with. So according to the wickedness of their deeds. Ke ma'aseh yedehem, according to the work of their hands. Remember, look at that noun, ma'aseh. When you have a noun that terminates in a segol hey, the construct is simply a seire, and that's why you have that. According to the work of yedehem, their hands, tein lahem, give to them. Hashav gemulam lahem. Hashav is again a hifil, imperative from shuv. Okay? So return their gemulam. To gamal means to deal with, and so this is their dealing or their recompense. Give their recompense to them. In other words, what they have earned or what they have coming to them. Ki lo yavinu el pe'ulot Yahweh. Verse 5, because they do not understand or pay attention to the works of Yahweh. That Yavinu, the root is being, and again, with this form, the call and the hifil imperfect are the same here. And I think they both mean understand, so I'm not sure what distinction you want to make. But they do not perceive the works of the Lord. Okay, so notice that the complaint or the prayer is not necessarily explicitly that they're treating the psalmist so badly, but that they're acting against God. Ve'el ma'aseh yadav. And they do not pay attention to the work of the Lord or to the ma'aseh, work of his hands. Okay, and I think that first line then you have to treat causally. Because they do not perceive the works of Yahweh or the work of his hands, yeher same. He will throw them down from haras. Again, a call imperfect. He will throw them down, velo yivnaim, and he will not rebuild them. That is a call imperfect from bana. He will not rebuild them. Okay? So now that ends his prayer. Now, verse 6 and 9, it's kind of rather a startling contrast here, okay? Notice how the psalmist is talking. He talks as if this is a later time and God has already delivered him in verse 6. So we continue, Baruch Yahweh ki shema kol tachanunai. Blessed is Yahweh because he has heard the voice of my supplication. Yahweh uzi u magini bo batach libi. Yahweh is my strength, uzi u magini, and my shield. On him my heart trusts. So you again, it's I think very significant in these laments as well. In the first verses, David thought that God had turned from him in silence, that he was angry with him. But now here you see in the latter part of the psalm that his faith reasserts itself and he trusts in Yahweh as if he has turned to the temple and once again been reminded of the God of grace and mercy. Psalm 42 is another beautiful example of that, and that's one of my favorite psalms in which it's as if clouds cover the view of God for the psalmist, but his faith finally reaches through the clouds to the promises and the love of Yahweh. And so here you see the kind of the same thing happening. So my heart trusts in him. Ve ne'ezarti va ya'aloz libi. Vav plus perfect nifal from azar. And I was helped. Okay? And I was helped. Vaya'aloz libi. And my heart exulted or leapt. Alaz. Okay? And notice there's some textual suggestions there. I was helped. I think that perhaps that vav plus the imperfect, that ya'aloz, perhaps means to indicate consequence. And so my heart rejoiced. I'm not sure. U mishiri ahodenu. And by my song. Okay, that shiri, that min, the mem is from the preposition min, and probably indicates something like means or instrument. By my song, ahodenu, I will praise him. The root of that verb is yada. This is a hifil imperfect in which the hey does not elide. Notice the hey usually collapses, so that the normal form would be just odenu without the hey, odenu, all right? But that happens in certain words. So I will praise him with my song. Okay, now again, verse 8. Yahweh oz lamo, u ma'a oz yeshuot meshicho hu. Now, Yahweh, look at the text has, Yahweh is strength for them. But the textual note suggests that a better reading would be to have an ayin in there. Yahweh is the strength for his people. And you'll see why later on. And a ma'oz, a fortress or a refuge of Yeshuot, salvation. Here this abstract word is in the plural, perhaps to intensify it or indicate emphasis. So he's the refuge of salvation, of the salvation of his anointed one, he is. Okay, so again, Yahweh is the oz, the strength or stronghold for his people, and the refuge of salvation of his anointed one, he is. Again, notice what's happening here. The king was the anointed one, all right? But the grace that was given to the king, he is also extending here to the people. And so you have that meshicho balanced in the first kola with amo, okay? So that as the king is blessed, so the people receive that blessing. And so the psalmist now is expanding from his own situation to the people. Very interesting. Okay? Hoshia et ameka. From yasha, again, that's a hifil imperative. Save your people. And these are very famous lines. Hoshia et ameka, ubarek et nachalateka. And bless your inheritance, your heritage. Again, very significant that the people are called God's inheritance, so that the point is that the most precious possession of God is his people. Okay? Ure'em ve'nasem ad ha'olam. Notice the King James has govern them, but a better translation is shepherd them. Ra'ah, feed them, shepherd them. Shepherd them and nas'em, lift them ad ha'olam, up forever, until forever. Okay, so here you have a beautiful psalm, a lament in which the faith of the psalmist is very prominent, especially at the end of the psalm. All right, that's all I have. Thank you.